Clear Truth, a podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me CeCe, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing,
Denise.
Yes, you could call me DD.
DD!
No, don't ever call me that, actually. That was a joke.
Actually, I was going to call you, as I like to, D-Nice, because Peele from Key and Peele brought out the trailer for his film. Ooh. His debut directing full feature length film, Get Out.
Get Out!
Isn't
that what he did, though?
Yo, I don't even know what to say about it. So, Blair Witch Project is out right now. That's probably one of my favorite horror films from way back when. I haven't watched the new one, but I was just talking to someone about how I like a very specific type of horror films. Most of the horror films don't do it justice, but
it looks very promising.
It looks very promising.
But you have to understand, when you have a guy that has been producing skits, so basically 3-minute, 5-minute movies for years,
mm-hmm.
he's going to make that trailer fire.
That's what I'm saying. See, I don't trust it.
Yeah. He's going to make that trailer be fire.
Because Key and Peele, even like Key and Peele, right? It works really well just to watch the individual sketches. But sometimes if you watch the whole show.
Yeah, sketches it together. Stitches it together. Girl, I can't talk anymore. I don't even know English. That's because I have German guests in my house. So all day long, I'm just like, blah, blah, blah. All stage. Can't speak, and it's rude to speak English. So thank you. You're my English speaking practice today. So thank you. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. But for real, when I sent you the trailer this week, what were the words? Shall I directly quote you?
Okay, what did I have said? Because you know that's for your eyes only. Sometimes. Okay, what did I say?
What did you say about white people?
Oh,
okay. You know, okay, we. I won't do the direct quote. But it is interesting that the plot
clearly a mess.
The plot is there's an interesting racial angle. It's real mysterious. It's unclear from the trailer, but you know, suburbia. It's a black man who's dating a white woman. They go home to visit or to meet her parents for the first time, and it's unclear, like, the white people brainwashing black people? Are they taking over their bodies? Is there some supernatural thing happening?
They doing all the things.
You know, when I first watched it, I love it. I was like, man, is this satire? I mean, it's an interesting time to bring a film like this out. I'm surprised.
I love it. I love the trailer. I'm so excited for this film because all of the things are happening. You got the brother. Because it has all of the horror movie elements. You kind of have the external brother in the background. Like, I do research on archival stuff for no apparent reason.
I know. He's like, did you know where you are right now, dude? They've been killing black people for you.
Yeah.
This is crazy. So it's a Universal is putting it out, distributing it. It stars Daniel Kaluuya, Allison Williams, Bradley Whitford, Caleb Landry Jones, and Catherine Keener. It opens on February 24th. If you want to check out the trailer, it is out now. Get Out. In other news, there was something I said that I was looking forward to doing on the weekend.
Ooh.
And then Netflix failed me miserably.
You should have contacted me. I knew what the deal was. Miserably. I knew how to get around it.
Oh, a lot of people claim they knew how to get around it. And then they were posting, it dropped for me too.
This is what happened. I was minding my business, mainline and Luke Cage episodes, basically. The honey had been like, oh, cut a bet. I was like, I don't even really like you like that. We need to reevaluate our relationship. It's all about Luke Cage right now. So,
did you watch it on the Friday or the Saturday though?
Okay, detective. I think it was the
it
day
would have
that
been the Friday.
It went down for everybody. So like it was
no
doing okay,
because
so.
You went to Sounds of Blackness on the Saturday. You could have been watching it then.
It was the day it went down for
nope,
everybody.
I don't believe you because you was in the club in the streets. I got receipts.
What would you think I do when I go home? Okay.
Anyway, it was down for a particular amount of time from 5 p.m. Let's say circa 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Maybe you were watching it outside of that time period. I was trying to watch it exactly in that
time period. It was in that time period. I could not get, and I went to, is it down for me or is it down for everyone or just me? And it was like, Netflix is down for everyone. I was like, since when?
Mm-hmm.
Since when is Netflix ever down for everyone?
Mm-hmm.
And so,
everyone.
And so I was still able to get it on the app. So on my mobile, I
didn't think to try the iPad.
I had to charge up. I was doing a tandem charge between my mobile and my iPad. I was like, charge getting low. And then I would go to the iPad.
I see. Very nice. That's a good tip. That's a good tip.
There you go.
But we're going to do an unspoiled review of what the internet has been talking about when it comes to Luke Cage. So for those of you who don't listen to us regularly or just don't believe in the internet, Luke Cage is a spinoff from Jessica Jones, both Marvel series. It's a Netflix original series. It dropped on September 30th, and it is very unapologetically Black. The main character, Luke Cage, is played by a man named Mike Coulter, and it takes place in Harlem, New York. So the rundown, he's a superhero. He's not quite feeling his superhero-ness. It's actually Marvel's first Black superhero. There's been a lot of talk on the internet, and that's what we're going to talk about because we don't want to spoil it for any of you who haven't had an opportunity to watch it yet. So a little background. Luke Cage was filmed in 2014 at the same time Eric Garner was killed. Mike Coulter then decided that he wanted to change a bit of something. I'm going to give you a quote. They're asking him about his hoodie. Normally, Luke Cage would wear a yellow hoodie, but it evolved into a dark hoodie. And he explains, quote, "It's a nod to Trayvon, no question. Trayvon Martin and people like him. People like Jordan Davis, a kid who was shot because of the perception that he was a danger. When you're a Black man in a hoodie, all of a sudden you're a criminal. That's something we shouldn't have to deal with, but we do. It's a double standard. We can't cover our head when it's cold and raining because, God forbid, someone sees us and puts our life in danger. We wanted to pay homage to that. It's not something we're shying away from." End quote. So you have white peoples on the Twitters upset with the lack of diversity, they call it. Where are the white people? It's Harlem. I did say it is Harlem. Why are they talking about Blackness? Why are they talking about Black people so much? On the other hand,
I'm mad that they made Shades white. I'm mad about that because in the comics, he Black too.
And there's that. And then on the other hand, you have Black people saying that there's respectability politics happening because, for example, Luke Cage does not want to be called nigga and does not use the word. What should be said is this was a very specific request on the part of Mike Coulter. He lobbied for that. He does not like the use of the N-word, and he did not want to be called it. He also did not want to use it. That is not the only thing that people are upset about, what they're calling respectability politics. But let's just talk about it for a second.
Okay, let's talk about the use of the N-word. Specifically with that, I'm glad that it actually shows that there's a diversity of opinion around that word and that there's a complexity of that diversity of opinion. Because while Luke Cage says, you can't use that to talk to me, you understand that nigga is a contextual thing. Like, I could be like, oh, that's my nigga. Or I could be like, I'm gonna kill that nigga. Like, those are very different sentences and I could be using it in a different way. And so when he turns around and he talks to the guy, when he stands up against that word, let's just say, it's being used in a context against him by another Black man in a way that is clearly that person is trying to threaten him and to demean him and to degrade him. And so used in that context, of course, right? But it was also casually used with the boys or in the barbershop or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no like come to Jesus moment about it. It's just like casual. It's like, okay. Meanwhile, he's also listening to Method Man, who uses it very liberally, very freely.
Yes.
Right, he's using listening to Wu Tang, who has it basically. They got like nigga anthems, right? So everything I saw was like da da da, right? Like, so there's a complexity in that. It's not just black and white with the use of the N word across the Black community and specifically within Luke Cage. And then when you look at a man coming from the South in his generation, his age, I can't imagine him having a radically different opinion. I don't know.
What are you trying to say about the South? Look, I will happily out myself as someone who does not use the word. I do not use it. I will maybe play with ninja sometimes. But it's not a word that I really take in my mouth like that. But I also just in general don't really have a potty mouth. And for me, the N-word kind of leans towards the potty mouth direction. So
right. I mean, they're definitely, when I lived in the South, my experience in the South was time limited. When I lived in the South, there definitely was a clear line of demarcation around who would curse, and the N-word was part of that, and who would not. And that was a lot around class too. Middle class people generally.
You're being shady right now. I see what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Not a little bit.
I'm gonna listen.
But this Luke Cage is a preacher's son.
Mm-hmm.
Not giving anything away by telling you that. He is a preacher's son from the South. There mm-hmm. is no way that a preacher's son from the South feels loose and free with the N-word. That just is in character. He's not coming up to Harlem and just like shooting off N-words all over the place. Like, that's just not how he feels.
Right. So he's not from New York. If he were from New York, it would probably be a different story.
Exactly. If he's trying, and it's clear that in this whole storyline, he's trying to be his best self.
Mm-hmm.
And so if he's trying to be his best self, there's no way that that's where he's going with his language. It seems like it would be untrue to the character.
So what do you think about the other aspects that people have brought up on the whole respectability politics? Why is it respectability if you want to look good in a suit? Why is respectability about, you know...
You don't even wear a suit all that often. Like, that's what's killing me about that.
Yes.
Like, it's not like he works in Wall Street or he tries to wear a suit just walking around. Like,
right, I mean, it opens up with him sweeping barbershop, right?
Right, so, like, there's one episode where he's, like, you know, wearing wearing a suit. So I think it's a problem. I think that people are a little sensitive mm-hmm. about noticing respectability politics and stuff, but I don't see it in Luke Cage. In the examples you just gave me with the suit wearing stuff, there's something.
Do you see it somewhere else?
No, I just hadn't seen it yet.
Mm-hmm.
Even his view on women and their agency seems to be pretty liberal right now.
What episode are you on?
I've seen all of the episodes.
So what are you talking about right now?
Right. So season one.
Okay.
I'm not concerned with how he treats women at all. It's all above board.
Okay.
But I really also think that we have to just get real about who and what characters are and allow that complexity.
Right.
Iron Man is shit with women. Let's be real. And, you know, having like his servant come and give them their dry cleaning in the morning and kick them out. You know, I mean, like, you know, that's who Iron Man is for real. And mm-hmm. at the end of the day, we allow that complexity to happen. We don't need Luke Cage to represent all that is true and good about Blackness. Like, let's stop that. Stop it.
Mm-hmm.
If you got respectability politics going on, let him have it. There's a lot of Black people with respectability politics going on.
Of course.
If you got, like, just listen, just let it happen. Not every Black character we see on the screen has to be the best and has to be the most representative. And that being said, like, he's a shining example of, like, IBM, ideal Black man, mm-hmm. right? Like,
right.
even still. And I really think that I will see progress when we can have superheroes, Black superheroes, no less, that are flawed as hell. Because we know
exactly.
If I had superpowers, there would be an alcoholic phase involved. Me trying to come to terms.
Well, see, that's Jessica. You Jessica Jones over there.
Yeah, I would be. Let's be real. Like, that's a very normal response. Like, all of a sudden, I'm immortal. Like, the hell? Like, what is my place? Like, it's hard enough for us as mere mortals with no superpowers working our temp job to try and figure out our place in the universe. And we still deal with those issues. So, like, imagine the increase in frequency of us dealing with issues if all of a sudden our physical capabilities were out of control. That would be a lot.
It would be
a lot.
And we black. But the thing is, I don't understand what the criticism is in general, because we have things like Empire that aren't representative in a lot of ways and are representative in a lot of ways. And you have a lot of different characters on there. And I don't hear anyone, honestly, I don't hear anyone fussing about Cookie being this, that, and the other. Cookie is doing a lot of things that I'm not feeling. But that's okay, because that's representation. Representation means that we're allowed to be very complex, multidimensional characters as we are in real life. And that is what we get to see with Luke Cage, in my opinion. Luke Cage is not a straight line. My biggest thing about Luke Cage is I want him to step up. I want him to embrace his superheroism. But he's not doing it. He's not doing it yet. But
my biggest thing is the formula. The formula where I see things coming and it's very sort of straight ahead. I want it to get a little bit more complex. I want him to be two steps ahead sometimes.
But we talked about this with Jessica Jones. That's just not so much his character, I think.
Another thing that I have to say is at first, I wasn't feeling Althea Woodard. Is that her name? Althea Woodard. Mm-hmm. Her style, I'm not like a general fan. So seeing her this much on screen, right. It's a little much for me.
Okay.
Misty works well for me. Mm-hmm. The nurse works well for me. Why am I blanking on her name?
Rosario?
Yes. She works well always.
Oh, always.
She just kinda has that.
Yes.
Whatever it takes for you to watch a lot of.
She has a lot to watch.
Yeah, okay.
I'm just saying.
I feel better, like some of her affectations and everything podcast. Are a bit redundant for me, but mm-hmm. they gave her a lot of complex shit. They piled it on with her. They were not sparing anything. And once I figured that out, I was like, okay, so let me see if she could have her breakout moment with this character, because this character would be the character mm-hmm. where you could, because right. it's so layered.
Right.
So we'll see.
We'll see. Well, congratulations to Luke Cage, breaking the internet, breaking Netflix. It's its newest original series. So much popularity that it broke the streaming capacity. And apparently it is the most streamed that they've had thus far. But of course, Netflix doesn't release those numbers. So that is some reporting that someone else offered, but I can't be sure. What we won't be talking about in this segment is Niggas in Paris. Not talking about it. We're going to leave it. But I will say Hip Hop DX posted a hilarious meme where they were like, yo, Kanye, your girl been robbed. Kanye says, by who? They say, by niggas in Paris. Loved it. But we won't be talking about that.
Well, I'm glad that she's doing okay.
I'm afraid there's a lot of drama behind that. I don't believe the story yet. So
you one of those.
Too many things.
You want to know? Yeah, well, you know, I'm kind of like what Karl Lagerfeld.
Oh, gosh.
Why do people still let him talk?
Our second segment, I want to talk about having a seat at the table.
Ooh.
Before we get to the album, let's talk about some women who are trying to get that seat at the table and are faced with what every other Black woman is faced with every day of the week, even though they have, like, they don't have seats at the table. They, like, brought the table and are offering seats to other people. About? First of all, just to give you some examples of what happened this week. A teacher's aide this week was fired after calling Michelle Obama a poor gorilla and a disgrace to America in a Facebook post. Now, this is someone who works in Forsyth County School District in Georgia, Gainesville, Georgia. And has made and is known for making racist posts. This wasn't even her first time. But she got fired and the school district was like, racism and discrimination are not tolerated in our school district. Well, they have been, apparently, because they weren't there. Then we have Amber Rose. Now, anyone who listens to the podcast knows how I feel about Rose. She's currently on Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah.
And she's doing a good job. And last week she was doing, I want to say it was a salsa sequence. I think it was salsa. And there was some booty popping, twerking happening in between. That was real sexy. And, one of the judges, Julianne Hough, was caught on video because the whole thing is recorded. So you will always be caught on video, saying that she felt uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And Amber Rose went on her podcast at the end of the week saying that she felt body shamed. Of course, Julianne came out with some nonsense talking about it didn't have anything to do with Rose's body. She just felt like with salsa, there has to be a lot of energy and tension and the energy was lacking. And that's what made the
so much was lacking. I felt uncomfortable too. I think that to be real, Amber was stretching that.
You don't think it was about body shaming?
Nah. I mean, like, it could have been, but it was too vague of a comment. It was a hella awkward, hella insufficient dance routine. It wasn't even salsa.
I don't know what it was. I thought it was salsa, though. I thought it was meant to be salsa.
Yeah, they were trying, but I do salsa.
Yes, you do. Regularly.
And that wasn't even, like, the right cadence. Like, it was wow. It was just so many things were off.
But it wasn't the right cadence.
And everybody felt it. Like, you look at the routine and you're just like, but I thought she used to be a performer. Where's the performance?
She was on poles. That's a little different.
Yeah, but just that. Yeah, I don't know. Like, clearly, like, she just doesn't have the umph to do syncopated routines.
Okay. So you didn't feel like the comment was about body shaming. You felt like she just felt uncomfortable watching it.
I
had made that
comment and I absolutely adore her body. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not an issue for me. I still would make that comment.
Okay.
She was really pushing it. So even if the woman was not a fan of her body, I don't really think that comment was enough to go on.
Okay, well, Julianne did say, quote, "I would like to say one thing also. The thing that I love so much about dance is that dance is a universal platform for people to express themselves. Any person, whether that is age or height, body shape, ethnicity, sexual orientation, it is something that people can express themselves to do." That's how she responded to Rose's apology. Apparently, Amber did say that she also apologized to Amber afterwards, but that was not recorded. So everyone felt like everybody was back into feeling happy and could continue on with the show. But a lot of people felt like Amber didn't have to apologize. A lot of people were on Amber's side with this.
Well, you know, I mean, I think that Amber is kind of one of those types of people that if she feels, I don't really think she's just trying to star stuff to star stuff. That's not the sense that I get from her. So she feels like maybe there was some unfairness in some of her judgments around people. Like, she'll just go take some mea culpa and just let that happen. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that about her. Like, there's not enough of that in the world. Like, sometimes you just need to be like, you know what? Actually, I ain't really mean to put you on blast like that. If that's not what you meant, that's not what you meant. Let that happen.
Then came out this week a survey done by Variety showing the earning power of stars in primetime, daytime, late night, and news television.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about the black women. Kerry Washington, $250,000 per episode for Scandal.
How?
Viola Davis, $250,000.
How?
For How to Get Away with Murder. Taraji P. Henson, $80,000 for Empire. I'm sorry, $170,000 for Empire. Tracy Ellis Ross for Blackish, $80,000 for Blackish. Let me remind you, friends, they striked to get $1 million
per episode.
And these black women who are running Thursday night.
Mm-hmm.
Are getting $250,000.
Mm-hmm.
Does anyone believe Viola now when she says she don't have a seat at the table for real?
Yes. Yeah, that's why when I was looking at Luke Cage, like, actually breaking Netflix, I was like, gosh, I hope he's getting his money.
I hope so, too. But they filmed that back in 2014. He didn't know he was going to break the internet like that. Mm-hmm. That was even before Black Panther was announced when they were filming.
I once worked for a corporation where I had a very honest boss. And one of the things that she once said to me was, when you get raises, it's not paying you for the work that you're going to do. It's getting paid for the work that you've already done. You can't even get the money for what you know you're capable of. You have to get the money for what you've already.
That's for women, though. You know, I hold talks on this all the time. Women get paid for what they have achieved and are expected to achieve. Men get paid for the benefit of the doubt.
Mm-hmm. For, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The thing, their potential.
Yeah, exactly.
Not what their credentials show they're capable of. Not what their past numbers show. They get paid for their potential. Mm-hmm. That's what they go to the negotiation table with. Tracy Ellis Ross was just nominated for an Emmy, and she's getting paid $80,000 an episode. Now, don't get me wrong. Of course, that's good money because it's 20-something episodes in a season. But in comparison to the fellas over at Big Bang Theory, I believe they're also getting the $1 million per episode. So it feels like, you know, if someone who is as well educated and who was earning more than her husband before they made it to the White House, if that person can be called a gorilla, if someone like Viola Davis, who is all over on the big screen, on the small screen, on television, earns $250,000, then maybe Solange is onto something with her seat at the table.
Oh, she's onto so many things with the seat at the table. Oh my gosh. Can we get into that?
We can get into it. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I wasn't expecting much. I'm gonna just be real. I'm not a fan.
You're not a fan of Solange?
I'm not a stan. Oh, okay. I mean, like, I'd heard some stuff in the past. Like, I saw that video where she was dancing around in South Africa, and I was like, this is really forgettable. Like, okay, peace. Like, it wasn't horrible, but it was just like, yeah, nah, nah, why don't you love me? And I was like, okay, bye. And then, so I lobbied for a Frank Ocean release. I think I wrote a fan letter. Like, dude, come off it.
You know, DeRay asked basically, like, every week on Twitter, when that Frank Ocean dropping.
And is it, so the anticipation levels were so high. You talk about getting paid for your potential, the men. And so, I mean, like, I bought that. Usually I hit the preview button on iTunes. I bought the Frank Ocean Sight Unseen, and it was so forgettable. Like,
you're not feeling his internalized oppression and his desire to be blonde. You're not feeling that processing of
none of it resonates with me, and it feels like an EP, not an album. The last track is just some static and somebody talking shit. Like, it's like, it's so sad. The best piece of that is Andre 3000.
Oh yeah, all day every day
on solo, where he kicks it and you're just like, oh, can I have a whole album? But you can't even get a whole song of it because Andre comes on for like not even a verse and a half, and it's like about yeah. Gives you your entire life in that verse and a half. And that's what I spent my money on, was that one verse. And then, you know, he has some moments where you're like, oh, I could kind of, okay. But he's not pulling a whole album together. You can tell why it took 2 years. He's clearly uninspired right now. I don't know what he's going through. He needs some new lovers. He needs some new management. He needs some new artistic partners. I don't know. Get it together, Ocean. But Solange went in the other direction. Solange had not really produced a work that really stood out as of yet. And on this album, she was like, I need Rafael Sadiq. I'm going to need Samba. Like, she just, all these artists that, huh?
I need Tweet.
Of course you need Tweet. I was like, yes. And Master P.
Lil Wayne. Everybody, really.
Can you all just come into my trailer and see what you do? Oh. Like, I just was like, what?
Mm-hmm.
Everything is fire. And it's so great because she was like, I'm going to stay in my lane.
Yes.
I am not going to switch my style up, but I am going to up my game all the freaking way. And that is what she did. She turned it up to 10. And I can listen, like, I kid you not. I can listen to this album on repeat all day long while working.
I've done that.
So long since I've had an album where I'm just like, and repeat.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. For those of you who missed this, Solange just dropped an album called A Seat at the Table. There are already two videos, Don't Touch My Hair, and what is the other one?
Cranes in the Sky.
Cranes in the Sky. Thank you. She has also now dropped a documentary that shows the evolution of making the album. It's been in the making for about, I think, 4 years now.
Mm-hmm. Took a minute.
Yes. She stayed in the middle of some sugarcane fields in Louisiana and had two sound engineers in there with her, two producers, and started working on the album. So you can find that documentary. It's out now. You can go to her Vevo and watch the two videos. And you can listen to the album anywhere. You can listen to it on Spotify. I'm so glad she didn't do any type of nonsense. But, you know, she's not friends with him. But I'm happy she didn't do any title nonsense. You can listen to it on Spotify. You can buy it on iTunes. And you can listen to Miss Tina speak some truths in the interlude.
And her daddy.
And her
daddy. She got everybody on there. She got her daddy. She got her mama. She was like, equal opportunity. Right? I was like, wow. I'm surprised she don't have B on there.
But you know what? I would like to say, though, for real, there is definitely some influence of Solange on Lemonade. Now, listening to this album, it's really clear to me that Beyonce was influenced by Solange and Lemonade, for real.
Of course.
And, you know, there's something like 51 writers listed on Lemonade. And still, after listening to this, A Seat at the Table, it's really clear to me that Solange is
influenced. That's the direction she was going in. Yes, yes. But the thing about with the Beyonce album, you still kind of get this sense of like, is this a charade or is this Beyonce?
Yes.
And that's how Beyonce likes it.
Right.
She don't want you all up in her business and she don't want you all up in her personal thoughts. Mm-hmm. You don't even know what she's feeling at any given moment. It might be Beyonce. It seems very convincing Beyonce, but you know, Beyonce likes to remind people, I'm an actress now. Y'all had clown me for my acting, but I'm an actress. I act all day, every day in this hairline. Now, salon, she's like, I ain't got no acting credit. This is authentically who I am. And that's what you see all over it. Like her fingerprints are all over it. So her
fingerprints are all over it. But also now she's been very vocal on social media about her support for Black Lives Matter. She's also penned an essay about the racially motivated abuse she experienced at a craft fair concert not too long ago. I think that was just a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, that wasn't long.
And what I think is really beautiful about the album is, unlike people like FKA Twigs and Tinashe, who don't want to be, as they call it, pigeonholed into the R&B category, Solange is like, this is
embracing that. R&B, this is a legacy.
And I am redefining it. You're not pigeonholing me. I'm telling you what R&B is today.
I love that. And, you know, at the end of the day, we know that there's like so much anti-Blackness in this idea that you can't, you want to do R&B, but not be called R&B.
Right. Exactly.
What is that about?
Mm-hmm. We can name a couple, but we've done that before. Mm-hmm. So what's the lesson in this week of looking at the Black women who we love, who are dominating television right now, and yet are not being paid comparably? Again, don't get me wrong. The salary is dope, but not comparable to their colleagues in the industry. We have the first lady who remains under attack. And I forgot to mention Ava DuVernay. Her new documentary premiered this week at a festival in New York. It's called 13th. And she goes from slavery through Jim Crow to mass incarceration, documenting the lives of Black people in the United States. And what I read about it, obviously I can't wait to see it, but what I've read about it is it does a really great job of finding that balance that we talk about here all the time of recognizing how far we've come and acknowledging that and appreciating that, respecting that journey. And at the same time, showing all of the deficit and all of the oppression that we still face and how far we still have to go.
I can't wait to see it. I cannot wait to see that. One thing I wanted to, as a very small side note, I want to say about wage disparities is that you said often that even though they're making a lot of money, and we really need to think about this, because when the NBA players were talking about how much they were getting paid, or the NFL players were talking about it, there was this sense that they're making so much money, they cannot complain anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's a big problem. What we know about wage disparities is that it only really exists for white collar workers in this sense, because if we both working at McDonald's, McDonald's got a standardized salary, right? Like, you white, you Black, you just, you know, like, we are making, you know, $7.50 or whatever it is right now for McDonald's. That's what we're making per hour. Mm-hmm. So there's actually more parity in minimum wage jobs.
Yes.
Amongst gender. Mm-hmm. But when we start talking about stuff where employees are salaried and can use employers can use discretion, that's when the big wage disparities come about. And that increases actually as wages go up. So it's natural that we're seeing massive problems when the wages are in the realm of 100,000 to a million. So yeah, but we knew always that Black women were on the very bottom of the race gender totem pole with regards to race. It doesn't surprise me in the least that this is happening in television and in happening in movies. What I think though is that shining a light on this can maybe be some sort of disinfectant. This came out, there was a lot of talk about this. Hollywood has been a bastion of sanctioned legal discrimination for a long time.
Yes.
Whether they're writing Black people out of movies or underpaying women, underpaying minority, underrepresenting both. It's always been happening in Hollywood, and it will continue to happen. But there's been some incremental change. When Sony got hacked, if you remember, there was this light shone on the fact that female co-stars were making so much less than their male co-stars. And I think that this is, of course, an extension of that.
It is an extension of that. But you will recall when Jennifer Lawrence wrote the essay that she wrote, she was applauded on all sides. Now, this is someone who's making millions. She's actually, I think at the time, she was the best paid woman at that moment for the movie she was making. I think actually the best paid is like Scarlett Johansson, which is, we've talked about that. But she was applauded for the essay that she wrote. Whereas when these numbers came out, very few people were thinking like that. Very few people were noticing, wait a minute, the Black women who are running Thursday night are not getting paid accordingly. That's not what was said. It was said, oh, wow, look how much they're earning. That's amazing. And that's my problem.
Who said that?
Yes. I don't want to call out the publications, but there were some Black publications that were like, oh, apparently we need to get into the acting business. Look how much they're making.
Oh, that's horrible. That's horrible. Yeah. Well, I think that the conversation around that has definitely evolved. And I think it's clear now who's at the bottom of that pay scale and who's at the bottom of that totem pole. That anytime there's salary transparency, that's when you see it. It was a Black woman engineer at Google who created the Google form, the Google Doc, and got, you know, like 20% of Google employees to volunteer their positions and salaries, and was able to have enough statistical data to make a lot, to show that Google was in step with all of the racism and all of the sexism that we see in salary discrimination in America. And that, and then she left the company because, you know, you can't stay after that.
Yeah.
But yeah, and it was a Black woman that did it. And it does not surprise me. Those that are on the margins, those that are queer, those that are disabled, those that are Black, those that are left out of the conversation are often the one to shine a light on the conversation and see, have you noticed these things? So I'm really hoping that these Black women come together and affect some change in their own pockets.
Absolutely. So my last question for this segment, do we want a seat at the table or do we want a new table?
Well, I want Ava DuVernay's table. Can I get that? Like, I was just like, can I move back to the States and be best friends with like Ava DuVernay and Solange? Can that be my life? I'll just like travel around. It'll be between like, okay, Taraji P. Henson, Ava DuVernay, and Solange. And then I'll be good. Is anyone missing? Not Mary. Mary don't make the cut.
Mary just dropped a single last night.
No.
Check it out. Think of it.
Is it called Collard Greens?
It's called Think of It. So there you go.
She said Think of It?
Mm-hmm.
I love it. I love me some Mary.
In our final segment, what are we looking forward to? What are we excited about? Let me hear it. What's going on? What's going on in Vienna?
What is going on in Vienna?
Nothing. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the Vienna Black Movie Club.
Yes.
Is having a premieres edition.
I know, I got the invite.
You got the invite? You coming to Vienna for that?
I might.
I think that might be worth a trip, though. For real. For real. You might want to look at what EasyJet's talking about.
Why are you going to put me on the EasyJet, though?
Because we're doing a threefer. We're doing Luke Cage, we're doing Queen Sugar, and we're doing Atlanta. And we're starting with Queen Sugar, going into Atlanta
and then Luke Cage. And then Luke Cage.
Yes. That's the flow. I created that order. Don't you think that would be a good flow?
That's the flow.
So I just wanted to do that. It's really a movie club, but there's been so much amazing acting coming out of series that I just feel like we need to highlight that right now. So I'm really looking forward to that.
I am looking forward to the African Art Fair that's happening right now in London. I'll be heading there on Sunday to get my fill. I'm taking my Black Queer Women in London group with me. That should be fun. That's all for this week. If you would like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. And if you'd like to donate to our podcast to help us keep going, you can do that on patreon.com/thequeertruth. Until next time, peace out.